Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, Jason Van Camp, ex-Green Beret, or maybe always a Green Beret, is going to join us and tell us how to achieve success by making things a little bit uncomfortable on yourself, on purpose, of course. News coming up as well. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you probably do one of those things, and you want to make it easy. You own an automobile. You got to get insurance on that. How about you bundle? Go with Geico. Makes it easy. Bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. That is at geico.com. Get a quote. See just how much you could be saving. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com and find out just how much you could be saving.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace Man, just browsing through Netflix, and I noticed the 24-Hour War listed amongst critically acclaimed films suggested for me. Right there next to Monty Python and the Holy Grail and Tremors. Good luck with the virus.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Well, good for us. Jason Van Camp has joined us. He's former Beret and has a, Green Beret, I should say. Also has the book Deliberate Discomfort, How the U.S. Special Operations Forces Forces Overcome Fear. Screw that up. Anyway, give it to us, Jason. Sorry, I got your bio upstairs.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, man. The book is called Deliberate Discomfort, U.S. Special Operations Forces Overcome Fear and Dare to Win by Getting Comfortable Being Uncomfortable. Pretty long subtitle, but there it is.
No, I know. I always screw that up. I've been into this deliberate discomfort thing for a while. I think it's really important. Did you always grow up with it? Was it something you learned? I know you played football as well. That's a kind of deliberate discomfort kind of endeavor. What was your relationship with it like when you were 15?
You know, my dad was pretty tough on me. My mom was very easy on me. So my mom was kind of like, you know, let's make the house a fortress of solitude. So when you come home, you can feel safe. But my dad was always kind of pushing the envelope and, you know, making me play sports, making me go outside and ride bikes and hang out with my friends and making me go outside so I wasn't just watching G.I. Joe and Transformers and playing Nintendo all day, you know? And I appreciate my dad for doing that because it made me tough. It made me who I am. And I really believe that, you know, you need to have a balance there, but my dad is really kind of the catalyst behind that for me.
Well, one of the reoccurring themes with the coronavirus and me is you have to work out your immune system. Your immune system needs to push back against something. And obviously your body needs to push back against something. You weight train, you get stronger, your muscles get bigger. You can ward things off. But there's a mental component to that. And while mom wants to wrap everyone in bubble wrap and dunk them in Purell,
right,
you can't build up any strength if that's your world. And you know, we're also kind of talking about balance. It's like we were talking about at the beginning of the show. Look, you could shut down everything for the next 5 years. That'd be the safest thing you could do, but it wouldn't be balanced. You know, there's a balance. Thank you, Sonny. Yeah. You just printed out your bio for me. What are you doing? Playing Fortnite and fast food? And why aren't you in a fetal position in the bathtub filled with hand sanitizer? Okay.
Adam, if you want to see what happens when the kid stays in to watch G.I. Joe and Transformers and plays Nintendo, just do a side-by-side with me and Jason, and you'll see. Jason, I'm guessing by your references we're about the same age because I stayed inside and watched Transformers and G.I. Joe, and thank God for people like you to go out and defend the country.
That's awesome. How old are you?
I was born in 78, so I'm 41.
I was born in 77. I'm 43. There you go, man. Nice.
So, and for my generation, it was, you know, Speed Racer and a little less Transformers. So tell us your story. You grew up where?
I grew up in Springfield, Virginia. So East Coast guy. And, you know, played a lot of sports in growing up in high school and everything. Like I said, my dad kind of shaped me in that kind of way. And I got an opportunity to go to West Point, United States Military Academy, and I went up there and I played football. I left after my sophomore year to serve a two-year mission for my church. I went to Russia. So in 97, I went and lived in Russia for 2 years. And then I came back, finished up my time at West Point, and I was commissioned an officer in the Army. And my first duty station was Korea. Lived there for a year, and then I went over to Iraq when the war kicked off in 2003. Became a Ranger, became a Green Beret, and then I retired, medically retired a little bit early in 2015.
You trained over 4,000 or nearly 4,000 Iraqi and Kurdish soldiers. I'm just reading the bio here. What is it? So we were talking about China. You were in Korea, Russia, Iraq. What is the difference, like culturally? Like, what don't we get? Like, what don't we get about Russians versus Koreans versus Iraqis? I find Koreans to be one of the toughest, hardest people on the planet. Like, but that's just the liquor store owners when they riot in LA every 17 years, but go ahead.
Tell us. Those are all different people, believe it or not. The Russians, yeah, and the Iraqis and the Koreans, those are all.
Oh, I'm saying they're the same group though. Well, what I'm saying is, it's like, you know how there's M&Ms and they're different colors.
I'm with you.
But they all taste, M&Ms. But yeah, if you close all your eyes.
Yeah. All candy coated.
It all tastes the same, right? Sure. That's what this American's saying. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jason.
That's a great question. How are they all different? I know a lot of folks like travel, you know, and they get a snapshot, like a just a tourist view of what life is like in these foreign countries. I got a chance to actually live there. And I'll just tell you a story from Iraq that makes it so different than what we, how we operate and what we believe in America. You know, like we did a lot of humanitarian aid missions, and we pass out Gerber baby food and different types of soccer balls and food and different things like that. And yeah, that's all well and good, but really what we were doing was we were planting seeds to gather intel, to gather information later on, you know. And we would come back to these villages and follow up and everything. And this one particular time, I noticed that all these Gerber baby food bottles were kind of empty, you know, outside this one door in this kind of mud hut compound. And I noticed an adult-sized spoon in one of the Gerber baby food bottles. And I was curious what was going on, and I opened a few doors and I found this old man. You know, he was, God, he must have been like 90 years old. You know, old guy laying on a bunch of reed mats eating this baby food. And I was pissed off, man, you know, because we got this baby food to give to the mother so they could give to their children. Their children were malnourished and they were dying and everything. And, you know, I picked this guy up by his dish dash, by his robe, you know, and I lifted him up and I immediately regret it because he was a lot heavier than I thought he was going to be. You know, and I was like, you know, I cussed at him a little bit. I was like, hey, what are you doing, man? Like, we gave this food to the mothers. You're stealing this food. And the guy was like, no, the mothers gave it to me. And I got my translator to come in and, you know, and bring the mothers that we gave the food to come in and kind of question them. And so the mothers came in. And I was like, hey, this elderly man says that you gave him the food. And the women were like, yes, we did. And I was like, that's bullshit. You guys are lying. You're trying to protect this guy. Like, tell me the truth. He stole the food. And they were like, no, please. And they got on their knees and they were begging. They were like, please, we gave him the food. And I was like, well, why would you give him the food? And they said, well, because he's an elder. Like, he deserves to live. He should live. And I was like, live above your children? And they're like, well, yes, of course. If our children die, we'll just have more children. But he's an elder. He has all the knowledge. We want him to stay alive as long as possible. And I looked over to my translator and I was like, that's kind of the opposite idea that we have in America. You know, like when our elders get, you know, older, we put them in an old folks home and we take care of them. When we say things like they had a nice long life, it's time for them to go, let's celebrate it. But they have the opposite viewpoint in Iraq, you know, and that kind of culture in that part of the world. And unfortunately, my translator translated that to the women and they kind of looked at me in disgust. And they're like, if that's how you treat your elders in America, then you're truly monsters. And that really kind of shocked me. I was like, man, that's like the epitome of how we think differently, you know, in America and in other cultures like that.
Well, I wonder if what drives it is just pure capitalism, because I always talk about the young demographic. Every show, everyone wants that young demographic. And you think about it, that guy doesn't have a lot of purchasing power. He's probably not going to buy a Lexus, But all the young people, as far as Madison Avenue goes and all the corporations go, you get that one young person to get into Crest or Taco Bell or Nissan or whatever. You can catch them young. Then they're going to be buying your shit for the next 70 years, you know, and that guy's at the end of his purchasing power. And so we're not interested in him. And if you take a look at any commercial, you know, every steakhouse has Rihanna and Britney Spears getting pumped into it now. Like everything is young, 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 young demo, young demo, young demo. They don't have a product, so they don't need a demo. You know, we have so many products and they all have to be that young demo. So our entire society culturally is like shifting around Madison Avenue. And you think about all these corporations, all these businesses, everything is every multivitamin comes in a chewable form now. Like everyone's fucking 11. I don't know. 40-year-old guys wearing 10 bracelets and chewing a Flintstones vitamin. What the fuck is going on? But our entire culture shifted to young, but it's not because we like young people. It's that old people don't buy shit and young people are going to buy shit for another 50 years. And we all shifted that way and we didn't even know it. We're just consuming all the commercials and all the music and all the everything. But that, I think that's what's going on. I would bet you, if you took a look at consumer cultures, all those cultures would skew young in terms of reverence as well. And then the older people, they become a burden. It's like all they do is cost money and they don't buy anything. Mm. I bet that's what's going on.
That's a brilliant way to look at it. I know that's how Nestle broke into Japan. They were trying to get their coffee in there for decades and they couldn't do it. Nobody would drink it. So they went young and started promoting Nestle chocolate to the kids. And when the kids grew up, they saw Nestle branded on coffee as well. And they started buying the coffee. So that's kind of how they did it in Japan, culturally. It's a great example.
It's really interesting if you think about businesses, big business and Wall Street and all that kind of stuff. Some of it ends up being kind of nefarious, but it's really just an interesting psychological experiment. Like with these people in a world where all the detergent is about the same and does the same mm-hmm. thing, all the women's shampoo. Every time John Stossel does the women's shampoo thing, the fucking Suave shit that's $2.99 is exactly the same as the Pantene. In a world where everything is almost the same, how do you get to a billion units versus going out of business? And that's psychological. Right? Like you have to have the right theme, the right music, the right smell, the right packaging. And so in a weird way, these big corporations are kind of like the ultimate in propaganda ministers.
Oh, yeah.
Like you've got to figure out what works. And then you have to infiltrate a culture and they have to figure out how to get them hooked on your shit. So again, it sounds pretty nefarious, but really everyone's just doing their job. What did you win the Bronze Star for? Tell us that story. I know I'm sorry for jumping around so much.
No, that's all good. I have three Bronze Stars and one Bronze Star with the Beat Device for Valor. And that's, you know, kind of the fourth highest award in the military and everything. And it was a difficult day. So whenever you see somebody with a Bronze Star with V, a Silver Star, you know, Purple Heart or, you know, Medal of Honor, things like that, you know that really what happened was they went through some tough stuff, you know, like it was a bad day for them, bad day for their team, more or less.
So give us a Bronze Star. Give us an example of earning a Bronze Star and then earning a Bronze Star with a V device for Valor. What would be the difference?
Sure. So Bronze Star with a V device for Valor, back to your original question, right? So that was a tough day for us. I was a detachment commander of a special forces team. And we had heard there were some high-level Al-Qaeda operatives around this lake, you know, and we didn't know if we should believe the informants who were telling us this, but we decided to go out anyway. And I brought an overwhelming force with me of Kurdish fighters, and we went out kind of in the middle of the day, which we never, never did. And we happened upon this village, and just so happened that there was a battalion Al-Qaeda meeting going on, and they were shocked to see us. And all of a sudden, there were just cars leaving the village, sprinting out of this village. And we're like, okay, we found something. So I directed my guys to surround the village. And we were catching guys trying to run away. And some of them tried to fight us and everything. And And it was one compound in the middle of this village. And some of the enemy fighters, the Al-Qaeda fighters, they started digging in and they started firing back at us. You know, and we were kind of shocked because usually, you know, as is the case, there's when the bad guys see us coming, they run away. You know, they can't defeat us. They can't, you know, stand toe-to-toe with us. And we're surprised to see them dig in. So we started assaulting the compound. And one of my teams went in a little early. And a guy on the roof shot two of my guys as they were coming in. My team sergeant, who's my right-hand man, he was shot through his legs. And then my engineer sergeant, 18 Charlie, his name is Rob Pirelli. He was shot in his helmet and right through his head. And so I got a call on the radio, you know, Eagles down, Eagles down, Eagles down. So I took my vehicle all the way up to the compound under gunfire and found my guys and my team sergeant, Don. You know, I didn't really know how injured he was. And so I kind of yelled at him, give him some tough love. Get up, man. Like, what are you doing? And he kind of just looked at me with defeated eyes, and I knew that he was bleeding out. And so I directed my medic to go take care of him. And I went around the corner of this compound, and I saw two of my guys. One guy, Chris, he was kind of crawling around on all fours, kind of frantic. I could tell that he kind of lost his mind a little bit. He wasn't all there. And Rob was laying on his back. And I didn't see any blood or anything, and I kind of was yelling at them as well, like, what are you guys doing? And Chris said, hey, Rob's been shot. And I looked at Rob, and I was frantically looking for the blood, and I was like, where? Where has he been shot? And he said, in the head.
We were chopping up on that last 15 seconds. So,
oh, sorry, brother.
So not your fault, you know, and it's not technology's fault. The fact that we're able to sit here and do this from everyone in a different part of the country or different part of the state or whatever it is, it's a blessing. And there's occasional snafu. He's on his back. You realize he's been shot in the head at this point, and we'll pick it up from there.
Yeah. So, I pulled the helmet off, and Rob's been shot in the head. And so I essentially held his head together with my hands, you know, and I was in a little bit of shock as well to see that, you know, because he was a friend of mine, he was a teammate. And so we put some gauze on his head. We tried to stop the bleeding, and I started yelling at my medic to come back over and help Rob, because I thought he was, you know, he was in a really tough spot. Naively, I thought we could save Rob's life. But an injury of that nature, he was dead. He was a goner. Although he was moving around and struggling to breathe and everything else, like he was essentially dead. And so we pulled Rob up on top of the Humvee, and we put Don, who was injured as well, in the back. And I was still under, you know, gunfire from the enemy, and we pulled out behind a berm, and we took care of the guys as best we could. We got a helicopter to come in and take them out. And then my team and I went back and we assaulted the compound, and we killed 9 enemy fighters and captured 14 guys that day. So it was a surprise that was the result of what was going to happen that day in our lives. We woke up. We didn't think that was, you know, in the cards, but that's what happened. And as a result of that, my chain of command gave me the Bronze Star with a V device.
What would the Bronze Star be like without the V device? Like you've won it without the V device, right?
Yeah. So
what was that for?
So those are up to your chain of command as well. So you never know. A lot of times guys that go through an entire deployment, sometimes 8, 9, 12 months on a special forces team in combat, and you see a lot of fighting and you do a good job, they oftentimes reward you with a Bronze Star.
So it's a lifetime achievement award for the Academy Awards. It's like, this guy's done a lot. Maybe there wasn't one instance of heroism, but there were so many. This guy was there the whole time in the shit. He deserves something.
Kind of. It depends. Sometimes they'll give it to you for an operation, and oftentimes it's, like you said, a lifetime achievement award sort of thing, you know.
Well, you know, I always felt that way, like when someone would – when they'd be student body president and then someone else would go, you know, it's just a popularity contest. And I'd go, fucking better.
Great. Yeah.
That guy's the most popular guy at the school, which is better than being the president. Right. So it's like, in a weird way, when you go, whether it's the Academy Awards or a Bronze Star, it's like, it's a lifetime achievement thing. I don't know. That's pretty good. Yeah. It's saying a lot. What are some things we could do around here on ourselves to deliberately impose some discomfort? Like what are some of the, I jump in a freezing cold swimming pool every morning, just impose that on myself. There's the cold shower. We all know this sort of workout version of this, but what are some other things that you talk about?
You know, people ask me that a lot. They're like, what can I do? And I tell them, hey, listen, it's not a one size fits all deal. Like, what's difficult for you? What's uncomfortable for you? You know, a lot of times my friends are like, well, I wake up at 4 a.m. and I work out early and I do work. Well, that's not hard for you, man. It's not hard to wake up at 4 a.m. when you go to sleep at 7 p.m. at night. You know what I mean? Right. Like, this is something that's difficult for you. Well, what do you not like to do? Is it spending time with your family? Do you not like doing that? Well, how about you try to start doing that? You know, is it going on that diet? Do you just have to have those snacks? Let's figure out how to remove those snacks that you know, those sodas from your diet and do something that's really hard and difficult that you don't want to do. Oftentimes, it's, hey, listen, stop watching TV. You know, anything that's hard for you, do it. And that's what we say, and that's what we preach in our book, Deliberate Discomfort.
You know, that's a very good point, because I know a bunch of guys who are comedians, and the number one fear, phobia that most people have is public speaking, but not Jeff Ross. He doesn't care about public speaking. He doesn't care at all. But some of the other things you were talking about, you know, but getting up at 5 a.m. and working out would be something that he would fucking hate.
Yeah, he would hate that, right?
I don't need to talk to him to know how much he would hate that. And I think we're all the same way. Like, I jump in the swimming pool, I can handle it. It hurts a little, but I can handle it. But that part where I got to hang out with my family, that's overcoming something. Oh. And I think we all have, like, versions. Like, they're things...
Terrifying.
You're good at. It's just what... I think what you're saying is be careful. Because whether it's jumping in the swimming pool, or whether it's speaking in public, or whether it's getting up at 5 a.m. and hitting the gym, if that's kind of your thing, then you're not really outside of your comfort zone.
Exactly. When people say, I'm the hardest worker in the room, I work so hard. Well, if you're working hard at stuff that you're good at, it's really not working that hard. You know, like, do stuff that is uncomfortable for you. Otherwise, you're in your comfort zone. You're in your safe space. Like, you jump in that cold water every day, it's become probably a safe space, a comfort zone for you. You need to get that water colder. You need to, you know, do something different. And that's what we try to teach people to do.
No, I 100% did Dancing with the Stars, 100%, because I was like, I don't know how to dance. I'm bad at dancing, and I'm going to be humiliated. Like, everybody is going to see this. And they will assume I did it for the money or for the fame or for the whatever. I did it for no reason other than it sounded like the scariest thing in the world to me.
I love that.
That's to me, though. Like, if you love dancing, like, if you're good at dancing, then that's not fearful. Then you're not getting out of it what I got out of it, because it scared the shit out of me.
Hell, you know? Yeah. Preach on. That's exactly what we are all about, man. And what was your experience with Dancing with the Stars?
Total nightmare.
No, I oftentimes think of it. Like, I oftentimes, if I'm backstage and I'm getting ready to walk out on stage or whatever, and it's a situation where there's some pressure involved, I think, oh, there's fucking nothing compared to Dancing with the Stars. Like, I remember that feeling. I remember being in my trailer, like, the first night, and it's like, we're going live in an hour, and everyone's got to get ready. And I remember I had a moment where I was, like, in my trailer, and I was, like, desperately trying to go over the moves,
the foxtrot.
Yeah, the foxtrot. And I was like, here we go. And I stepped with my left foot, and I went, oh, wait a minute, is it the right foot? Wait, it's the right foot. Oh shit, no, fuck. And then I was just like, oh, I don't know anything. Like, I'm just going to get out there and just fucking draw a blank. Like, they're going to announce my name. The spotlight's going to hit me, and I'm going to step with the wrong foot. Like, I don't know what foot to go with. And I remember just being, it was so weirdly intense, but it wasn't intense for Christy Yamaguchi because she knew how to dance. She was really disciplined and she was really good. I'm the guy from the Man Show who knows nothing about dancing and makes fun of other people for dancing. And I was just going to go out there and make a complete ass of myself. And it transformed me a little bit in that I would think about it all the time. Now, Christy Yamaguchi may be scared shitless to get into a race car, but that doesn't scare me. I'm used to that. That's not a big deal for me. So it's so true that it's not just what you're doing, jumping in a cold pool or racing a race car. It's what are you doing that scares the shit out of you? And like, yes. I said, Dancing with the Stars scared the shit out of me.
That would scare the shit out of me too. Like dancing in front of millions of people, I would be terrible at that. But that's what, I mean, honestly, I'm proud of you for doing that. That's what makes you like a hero in my eyes for doing it.
He does not throw that word around.
No, I was horrible at it.
You got to unicycle a little bit.
I got a little, look, I got four dances in and I did a fifth like bonus dance. It was all I needed out of it. I've told the story, but Jason will enjoy it. I remember exactly where I was when I got the phone call, and it was my agent, and he just called and he said, they want you to do Dancing with the Stars. And all the excuses like rushed to my head. Like, that's lame. Come on. What would Jimmy say? I got enough money. I don't need that bullshit. That's for C-list celebrities. Yeah. It's all true. But I felt a little shock in my spine. I felt like a little fear.
Yes.
Fear come through me. He just said, Dance with the Stars. You want to do it? They called. They want you to do it. And I was like, fear. I got hit with fear, and I was like, oh, you can't ignore that fear. You're gonna tell him it's goofy and it's lame and you don't need it and you don't watch it, you're not a chick and whatever, but those will all be lies. The truth will be you're not doing it because you're scared. And then I just paused. I went, I'm in, let's do it. I've never asked what the money was. I never had any idea what the compensation was or anything. I was just like, now we have to do it, because that just scared the shit out of me. So that could be the swimming pool, but it could be public speaking, but it could be getting up at 5 and hitting the gym. Find that thing that you fear.
Go ahead, Gina. I'm sure this
couldn't be farther from something that you're afraid of, but when you said that shock in your spine, Adam, the thing that immediately came to my mind was the first time I ever shot a gun, and I almost dropped it, you know, on the table because it was so terrifying. It was so loud. It was powerful. I do not come from that world. This is not something I've ever been interested in. And I remember going, that was terrifying. I guess that means I have to learn how to shoot guns now. And
Everyone didn't seem like something
I would do, but it was a very visceral reaction that I said, well, I guess this is something that I don't want to be scared of anymore.
Well,
and I did.
Of course, what you come from a background of theater and the majesty of dance.
And Jews.
And you know it, you would probably be thrilled. Look, there's people that lobby to get on Dancing with the Stars.
Lottery win.
They try so hard to get, it's not scary to them. Whereas the first time I shot a gun, I was like, oh good, this sounds like fun. And I had no problems with it. So that's the whole point. Yeah. Find your version. Nothing could be further away than firing guns and doing Dancing with the Stars. Yeah. But that's the whole point. You and I aren't the same person as well. So Jason, it's a very good point. Don't think of things that are scary in and of themselves. Think of things that scare you. Yes, Brian.
I don't know if I told you, I think I must have told you this at some point, but it's funny you mentioned the Dancing with the Stars experience, because when I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was thinking, oh, let's do an anniversary show for Last Revolve Brian, blah, blah. And then I thought, oh, I'll host it. I'll do stand up. And then I was like, oh, I don't do stand up. It's not comfortable for me. And I remember your words were like, you synthesize it down into essentially, if it scares you, it's something you should do. And I was like, well, I guess I gotta take a stand-up class now and learn how to do it.
That's unless it involves a bear, do it. Maybe even if it involves a bear. Jason, more thoughts, please.
Well, I love how you said it sends that shock down your spine. You know, like a lot of things scare you, but very rarely does something scare you so much that sends a shock down your spine. If someone were to tell me, hey, you're going on Dancing with the Stars, I would feel that shock down my spine. I'd be like, oh my God, I don't know how to dance. What would I do? And I would probably be making excuses like you did, like, oh, well, I can't do it, or, you know, whatever, I'm sick, or I'm busy that day, or whatever it looks like. But man, making that courageous decision, you know, fear, right? It causes some people to break and other people to break records. And I had that shock down my spine when someone challenged me to go to Ranger school and be an Army Ranger. Like, initially, I didn't want to do it. I didn't think I could do it. And I went and tried out and volunteered for it. It was amazing. And again, same situation where friends of mine challenged me to go Special Forces to try out for selection, the qualification course. I didn't think I had it in me. I didn't know if I wanted to do that, but it scared the hell out of me. And I did it, and I don't regret it. And that's kind of what life is all about, pushing your comfort zone, finding out where your limits are so you can be a stronger person in life and better contributor to society.
And you want to talk about something that you collect and cash in and use on a daily basis without even being conscious of it. You get a long collection of experiences and a long collection of things that scared you, but you overcame. And it's not really about winning Dancing with the Stars. It's literally just showing up. And it's that way with so many different experiences. And if you go out and collect those, you just carry them around with you. And then shit comes up and you don't even consciously think of those experiences. You just you've had them. You are that person. And the next thing really doesn't sound like that big a deal. I mean, we all know the people who've never pushed themselves, never worked outside their comfort zone, and everything is overwhelming to them, right? And then we know the other person that's constantly lives outside of their comfort zone, and nothing sounds overwhelming to them. It doesn't, it's the same person. It's just one person is living outside of their comfort zone, and the other person is smack dab in the nougaty center of their comfort zone all the time. And everything sounds overwhelming to those people.
Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, like, if you say you writing a book is not so different than being a Green Beret, right? It's like, that's not something that you would have thought about doing. That's not your world. But yet here we are. Like, what was that experience?
Kind of the same thing. Like, I didn't want to be judged. I didn't want people to attack me. You know, I didn't want to do my community a disservice by saying or doing something stupid, you know, writing something stupid in the book. And, you know, I just said, honestly, man, brother, I just said, fuck it, let's do this. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not afraid to do this. I have something to say. I want to stand up and say it. You know, it's uncomfortable to start. And what I found out was I enjoyed writing the book. You know, every morning when I woke up, I had something exciting to look forward to. And, you know, we had so many people that contributed and helped and edited the book as well. But it was incredibly enjoyable for me, you know, and I loved every second of it. It took us about a year and a half to finish it from ideation to completion. And, it was just an incredible experience.
Well, and, the last little caveat here with people is I'm a dumb guy. I can't spell. I can't read. I wrote a book as well, but I can't dance. I did Dancing with the Stars, but they came to me. I had a little moment of fear. And then I said, fuck it. We're doing it. For most people, folks aren't going to come to them and ask them to write a book, and they're not going to come to them and ask them to be part of Dancing with the Stars. You're going to have to seek this out and impose it on yourself. Now, there's a kind of version of things will come to you as you get into different worlds, and then people are going to invite you to go out and you might start exploring hunting. And then at some point somebody goes, you want to do bow hunting? And you're going to go, oh shit, that sounds like a lot more work than hunting. And then the answer needs to be yes. That's the whole point.
Isn't that the quote, as cheesy as it is, the world expands and contracts according to your courage. So those opportunities will start coming around the more you start saying yes.
Yeah. Awesome. I, you know, it's a weird thing. I got people always say, like, what made you decide to do this, Dancing with the Stars? Or what made you, why are you going on Tucker Carlson? Or like, what are you doing? I go, they just asked. I said, yeah, that's why I did three quarters of shit I did. It's just because I didn't say no. Somebody just asked me if I wanted to do something. I went, yeah, I'll do it. I just say, you say yes to more things in general, everybody. Final thoughts, Jason Van Camp.
Well, you know, it's been awesome to be on the show. I was really looking forward to coming out and meeting you guys in person and hanging out. So maybe we'll do that in the future. But if you guys want to send me your address, I'll send you some signed copies of Deliberate Discomfort. I'd love for you to take it, read it, tell me what you guys think. And if anybody in the audience wants to find out where to get it, you can go to Amazon to buy Deliberate Discomfort, or you can go to our veteran-owned and operated partner, Nine Line Apparel, where you can get a limited edition T-shirt and book bundle. And hey, pressure is a privilege, and getting comfortable being uncomfortable is what our book is all about, man. Life should be hard, but not miserable.
No, it's a good point, and it's so true. And we spend so much time scratching and clawing toward comfort and stability and familiar, and it's kind of a quest. You know, it's a quest for us to find shelter and warmth and nourishment. And it's like, mm-hmm. there's a part of our brain that is making a full-time job from seeking pleasure and comfort and safety. And unfortunately, it's all available now. We have all the air conditioning and Grubhub we need. And now, folks, you're going to have to start self-inflicting it. You're going to have to go out of your comfort zone, and you have to put it on yourself. But the good news is you get more out of it when you put it on yourself. You really get a greater return on investment. You know, I used to live in a very uncomfortable world, and I didn't get that much out of it. I was just a poor person with no air conditioning and didn't have a sleeping bag when I went camping. I get more out of it now that it's self-imposed. So thanks, Jason. We appreciate it. And go get that book, everybody. Deliberate.
Thank you.
Yes. Thanks, buddy. All right. Let me hit cigar.com, and then we'll break and do some news. You're stuck at home. You got all the stress. You want to relax. You want to enjoy a nice cigar delivered right to my door and right to your door. Cigar.com, the home for cigar enthusiasts, in business for almost 25 years, largest selection, over 1,400 brands like Ashton, Cohiba, Monte Cristo. I have mine right now. It's a Cohiba Nicaraguan, which I enjoyed out in the backyard. Lit it up and just blew off a little stress and a little steam. Incredible prices on over 50 million cigars in inventory. Can you believe it? And for really dedicated enthusiasts, Cigar of the Month Club. How about that? Just buy what you want when you want. It's all up to you. So you can either be in the Cigar of the Month Club, or again, just buy what you want when you want it. That'll be your decision. Not sure what to choose? Their in-house experts can help. It is cigar.com. Enjoy, especially now that there's all this stress and you want to just get out in the yard and get a little quiet time. Enjoy a nice cigar. Am I right, Dawson?
Right now, for a limited time, they have a great 15% off deal on any order of $99 or more. Plus, you'll receive free shipping, but you have to go to the website, cigar.com, to get the special offer and use the promo code Adam. The site is cigar.com. There's no S. It's cigar.com, and use promo code Adam.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
President Trump has extended the social distancing guidelines through April 30th. There was talk of loosening all this up by Easter, but we're going to push that back a couple of weeks. He also made headlines for bragging about the millions of people tuning in to view his daily press briefings on the pandemic, saying on Twitter, and I think we have it, that it, his average ratings matched a season finale of The Bachelor, according to Reuters. Trump tweeted, because of the ratings of my news conference, etc., are so high, Bachelor finale, Monday Night Football type numbers, the media, the lamestream media is going crazy, all caps. And he went on to say, Trump is reaching too many people. We must stop him, said one lunatic. See you at 5 p.m. Trump's daily corona. Yeah.
What is, what do you think Trump, I was thinking about it. Trump bringing up the fact that he issued the quarantine or issued the no fly folks from China. You know, I don't know. It was like January 21st or 31st or something, whatever it was, like 10 days. He weaves it in. Like whenever he's doing the press conference, they talk about masks and they talk about testing. And then he subtly slides in. It's a good thing I did.
Subtly.
It's a good thing I stopped the flights in from China when I did. And I thought over under. On the amount of times he brought that up versus times I talked about being an all-valley football player. You think we'd be tied?
He is closing the gap.
He's flattening the curve.
He's flattening the curve.
Right. Now, I spread this out over 37 years. He's had to make it all up in the last 7 weeks. Yeah. But I think
he's got some catching up to do.
But he's going to get me. I think he's going to get there. I think he's going to get there.
I think you might be right. So meanwhile, Washington State public radio station KUOW has stopped running his White House briefings, and they say it's due to a pattern of false or misleading information provided that cannot be fact-checked in real time. So, you know, when you go off the script a little bit and it can't be fact-checked in a way that, you know, is reportable, they're bowing out.
Everybody hears. I feel like if Trump opens his mouth, it's got to be fact checked. I mean, not fact checked, but your brain is. I mean, look.
Grain of salt.
Doesn't everyone have a crazy Aunt Connie who, like, she's like comes in and she starts talking about something, and she was like, you know, we were at Epcot Center in Orlando, and I was asked by a staff member if I was Jewish. And you go, what do you mean you were asked? Yeah. She wanted to know before I got onto the ride.
The teacups.
No. You're like, is that really? Is that just crazy? That's just her talk. We all know those people. I feel like we should know
indeed.
That.
Indeed.
Yeah,
everyone needs to know that with Trump.
Trump has reached crazy Aunt Connie status. And whatever they say, you're in your mind, you're like, that can't be true. That can't be true. There must be a version of that that's true.
Yeah, some of it may be, you know.
Yeah, there's a version. There's some. It's from, you know, a germ of truth.
This is a weird. We're living in a weird world where Trump may just go full Lamborghini on everyone's ass, which is Lamborghini was a very wealthy and successful tractor builder, and as an industrial guy, he made himself a lot of cash. And he bought himself a Ferrari. And then he had some troubles with the Ferrari. And he went in to talk to Enzo. And he's like, hey, man, you got a few things wrong with your car. Let me tell you how to improve them. And Enzo's like, get the fuck out of my office. And he's like, well, fuck you then. And he just went back to the place that was making tractors. And he's like, hey, new plan. We're making sports cars. That's our new thing. And maybe Trump will just have his own media company. Maybe it'll just be the Trump channel. Maybe Bloomberg can.
I think that's the plan from the beginning.
From the beginning. Like, it's going to be it. Like, all right, you're not reporting on me, or I don't like a fake news or whatever it is, or I'm just having my own, let's put my own camera up here and we'll just do our own
settle
thing.
Settle in, watch a little Trump TV.
That's where we're going, I think.
All the kids can have their own show.
Right.
I'd tune in.
I would too, yeah.
Coronavirus cases in Louisiana, which we spoke about the other day, spiking at an alarming rate. Despite that, a pastor at a church near Baton Rouge is defying a ban on large gatherings, continues to lead Sunday services of more than 1,000 congregants in attendance. It's Pastor Tony Spell of the Life Tabernacle Church. He says he'll continue welcoming people to his Sunday and Tuesday services because he doesn't believe anyone's at risk of catching this virus. He told the reporters, quote, it's not a concern. The virus, we believe, is political. politically motivated. Mm-hmm. We hold our religious rights dear and are going to assemble no matter what someone says. This is an extreme test brought on by the spirit of Antichrist and the mystery of lawlessness. As of this reporting, there have been 65 reported deaths in Louisiana. There's an online petition calling for the arrest of Pastor Spell. I believe Liberty University, Jerry Falwell Jr., either is still open or was still open until very recently for, you know, similar reasons.
Well, let's thin the herd a little bit. You know what I mean?
At this point, what are we talking about? I assume that's a joke. But at this point, like, if with all the information we have and all the experts, literal experts, Dr. Fauci and on down, telling us what to do and how to handle this, if you're defying it at this point, that's on you, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm actually surprised there's not more of it. I mean, if you think about this country, think about religious folks, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Think about, you know, only God. I take my orders from God. I don't care about the man. You know, I'm surprised that there are as little of it in these instances as there are. I would bet you, I'm wondering if you went back 75 years when we were more religious, if there wouldn't be more defiance of this stuff. If there would be more people going, fuck it, I'm going to church anyway.
But if you're religious, you're good at, you'd be really good at following rules.
Yeah.
So but not man's rules, God's rules. Not
true.
Not Mayor Garcetti's rules, the Almighty's rules.
Not Moses Garcetti.
I think there'd just be a lot more of it. Like there was a lot more like frontier justice and stuff like that.
It's interesting though. I'm not talking about these congregants anymore. And I know that it's easy for this kind of conversation to go off the rails, but you think of like preppers and like doomsday preppers. They're great at like gathering ammo and food and masks and shelter and oxygen.
This is their time to shine.
It's a little confusing as to who's on what side and why. I feel like we have all of a lot more in common than we realize.
Well, there's X amount of crazy people in any population that is not going to do whatever it is you ask them to do. There are X amount of defiant people that are just, the reason the United States is United States, because we're not going to listen to what the guy in the, you know, on the mountain is going to have to tell us. Right. So there's going to be a percentage of whatever version of this is, there's going to be a percentage of people that aren't going along.
Right.
And they're going to defy it. Some are going to defy it because they're nuts, and some are going to defy it just because they're defying it. Like, mm-hmm. You can't tell me I can't go outside.
You're right. I politely referred to it earlier on the show a few days ago as a philosophical resistance. But whatever it is, whether you're religious or whatever the thing is, yeah, some people are defiant. Who knows? Some people are just not going to toe the line.
Yeah. But I do mean, hey, if you're nuts and you're more little piece and you want to get together with other like-minded heavy set folk that are insane, you don't need to have kids. You need more of you. Yeah.
Sure. Well, I wonder what you guys think of President Alexander Lukashenko in Belarus.
Love that guy.
Yeah. Countries are closing their borders, hospitals struggling with surge of cases, and some of the most repressive societies in the Soviet Union carrying on business as usual. Their leaders prescribe unusual remedies amid this pandemic. So maybe we're working smarter, or working harder, not smarter. So they talk about Belarus in this article. It's a small country in between Russia and the European Union member Poland. President Alexander Lukashenko has shrugged off all these concerns about COVID-19, tells people that hockey, vodka, and a traditional sauna called banya are the best cures for COVID-19. He's ruled the country of 9.5 million people for more than a quarter of a century and has imposed a few restrictions to prevent the virus spreading any further. Restaurants, parks, bars, everything's open. Mass sporting events, all on schedule, attract huge amounts of spectators. And of course, this is defying the World Health Organization's recommendations. And the Belarusian Premier League is now the only soccer competition on the continent. But apparently, it's just been a lack of hockey and vodka and saunas.
I think he's got something with the sauna. I'm not sure about the vodka. You know, exercise and sauna, probably good. Folks,
and I think this virus does not like hot weather. So saunas are good.
Yeah, if the vodka's over 100 proof, you can sanitize with it.
They've been talking. Yeah, just dump the vodka on you and get in the sauna and don't light a match. We've started talking about saunas and cold dips and hot extreme, you know, like extreme stuff. I'm sure whenever they come out with data, it's always, it turns out sauna's good. So maybe people start thinking about that. Exercise, good. Not sure about the vodka part. But on the other hand, you know, we don't have – when I was talking to Ed Calderon, and he's the guy who grew up in Tijuana, and then he was part of the police force, and then he came out here, and now he's a sort of advisor, lecturer, and defense or self-defense and security and all that kind of stuff. You talk to him about Mexico. They don't have the same relationship with death that we do. Like, it's not as big a deal there as it is here. We got a big deal. It's a big deal for us. Yeah. And other countries, they don't have that relationship. It's a little more casual. Like for us, you know, we make a lot of proclamations. If one person dies and that's one too many and blah, blah, blah. Most of these countries around the world, they don't have that. They don't have that vibe when it comes to death. And so we kind of expect everyone to act like we're acting or to listen. And we are more evolved. Like, don't get me wrong, but good luck talking them into that. Like, Mexico, death is kind of a regular thing. It really is. And also, as we kind of alluded to in prior shows, it's kind of like the inner city. You know what I mean? Could you imagine if that shit was going on in Pasadena and the Palisades? Imagine if the shootings that were going on in the inner city of Chicago were taking place in the Palisades or Santa Monica. I mean, it'd be total insanity. It'd be total insanity. So it's like there's a different relationship with death that people have that just live in that neighborhood than live in the Palisades. And then their whole countries that are that way. Belarus, maybe one of them.
One of them.
All right, cue up your next one. Let me hit BetterHelp. Oh, life is stressful, people. We could all use a little help out there getting through our day. BetterHelp, they're online counseling. Licensed counselors who specialize in issues including depression, anxiety, complicated relationships, grief, trauma, anger, and more. Schedule secure video or a phone session, plus securely exchange unlimited messages. Just fill out a questionnaire about your needs, get matched with a counselor, and start communicating in under 24 hours. If you're unhappy with your counselor, you can easily request a new therapist anytime at no additional charge. Well, you're in your house. You can't go out of your house. There's all sorts of crazy stuff going out in the world and in your community. And maybe it's the time to get a little better help, right, Dawson?
Adam Carolla Show listeners will get 10% off their first month with discount code Carolla. That's betterhelp.com/Carolla. Why not get help? Betterhelp.com/Carolla.
All right, what else we got, Gina?
Seinfeld co-creator and Curb Your Enthusiasm creator Larry David and American media executive, yes, he's a real person, Lloyd Braun, have started a GoFundMe page for Riviera Country Club caddies who are out of work in the midst of all this pandemic. It says on the GoFundMe page, with the golf course closed indefinitely, the Riviera caddies need our help. Please contribute to help our caddies get through this unprecedented time. This is located over in Pacific Palisades in California. It hosts the Genesis Invitational. Adam Scott won it in February. I only know of one Adam Scott. I believe it's that Adam Scott. It says the club is closed as statewide shelter at home order has been issued, with courses in California closed as they are seen as non-essential, though in states like Connecticut, they are allowed to operate. As of this recording right now, they have $127,000 in donation. They want a goal of $150,000. Larry David donated $5,000, it looks like, per the page. Tom Brady pitched in $2,000. And I was going through, a lot of the big donors are anonymous, but it's great and just as expected. A lot of the $5, $10 are just so somebody can put up a Seinfeld quote or say something about Lloyd Braun. So it's working. Like someone just wrote for $10, somebody put, "Your mother was right. You never could compete with Lloyd Braun." There's a lot of Lloyd Braun jokes on here.
Oh, nice. I worked very closely with Lloyd Braun for, God, on a number of sitcoms. So I know Lloyd pretty well. I don't normally take this road, but the average income from the average guy who has the Riviera Country Club membership, I mean, how much is that country club? 200, 250 grand a year? I mean, these country clubs, they're not 18 grand a year. Mm-hmm. They're 200 grand a year. Like, they're really super expensive. Lloyd and Larry David and, of course, Tom Brady and whomever, these guys have tons of money. Now, I'm not this guy, as I've said. Like, when Zuckerberg gives $8 million to malaria relief, I go, good for him. I don't go, he could give more. He's a billionaire. I go, no. But these guys are the guys who use these caddies. Like, that's their caddies at their club. And they all have more money than God. So, like, in this particular case, it's kind of their group. Like, don't you feel like they could just take care of them if they needed to? Or certainly the country club. What do you think? What's it take? Like, if I wanted to join Riviera Country Club tomorrow, what would it cost?
The first thing that comes up, and by the way, apparently there's a pro golfer named Adam Scott. I got excited that it was the actor.
I don't think the actor won the Open tournament.
Maybe it was a celebrity tournament. So the first thing that comes up is from something called Outside the Cut, and this is from 2019. It says, become a member, $300,000. The only surefire way to guarantee yourself a tee time at Riv is to become a member. It's not nearly as exclusive or difficult to join as Riv, blah, 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 but it'll set you back $300,000 for initiation.
300, if you got 300, I don't know, some of these guys are grandfathered in or whatever, but 300 grand to join. Like, what if a Costco costs 300 grand? The point is everyone in that Costco would be rich if you ever walked into that Costco, right?
Tycoons.
And there'd be guys, like, they'd go, the old lady'd go, "You want some cheese samples?" And they'd be like, "I brought my own samples, my dear." And the guy'd pull out Jeeves would pull out his own thing.
Actual truffles.
Yes. I'm saying I think the members there could take care of the caddies or certainly float them for several months until this whole thing blows over. I'm not sure that we need to do this GoFundMe page. I don't care. I don't have super strong feelings on it, but I don't know how many members, but could they all just get together and pony over $4,000 and take care of everyone?
Like I said, Larry David, who started the page, kicked in $5,000. And a lot of the anonymous people are anywhere from, you know, 500, 1,000, 2,000. Like you said, these are their caddies.
How many caddies do you think there's 25 caddies?
That's a good question.
By the way, 25. I would bet you that is quietly a pretty fucking killer gig.
Oh, yeah.
Like, in my pantheon of gigs where, hey, things didn't work out after high school, but they still can. Being a caddy at Riviera, it's exclusive. First off, it's beautiful country, if you guys know where it is. It's right off of Sunset there, sort of around where OJ's old house was, I think.
Okay.
Is that Riviera there? Or is it the other one that I'm thinking of? There's one that's more in Hollywood and one that's more on the West Side. But anyway, I think Riviera is just off of Sunset over there as you're heading toward the beach. It's beautiful country. The fucking facilities are great. Everything is great. You're dealing with the richest people on the planet and the coolest celebrities on the planet. And they're probably tipping the shit out of you after each round. I mean, that is
just anyway.
That's a sweet gig. It's a sweet gig for a person that doesn't have a bunch of medical school in their background and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, we're looking at it. Yeah, it's off of Sunset and Brentwood-esque, also sort of between Brentwood and Pacific Palisades and up there. It's beautiful, sweet gig, And I should say one of their 1,000 members should, they should all put in $5,000. Like,
yeah, be done with it.
Take care of everyone.
Yeah.
Okay.
So The Late Show will have all new episodes this week starring Stephen Colbert. They'll be from his home. After taking a brief hiatus amid all this outbreak stuff, airing old episodes, Colbert is ready to return with all new shows. He announced on Twitter saying, "I'm staying home and so is everybody who works for me. But thanks to some amazing work by my staff and CBS broadcasting folks, we will be back this week with new late shows until then." Jimmy Fallon, he's continued to post shows from his home on YouTube. He's going to return same kind of format, two guests and a musical performance each night. And it's going to be, you know, patched together. I would imagine the similar way we're doing it.
Yeah. Everyone has to do that because the optics will be horrible if these guys come back and are breaking rules, you know?
Yeah.
Well, so, think about the audience.
Yes.
Consider the audience, either what, like 50 people or nobody. It's going to be weird no matter what.
Oh yeah, there's going to be no. I don't think there's any audience. I think just
if they were to do the studio thing, yeah, what would they do with the audience? Would there be 20?
Oh right, right. There wouldn't be anybody, and yeah, they have to do it this way. But they have, the optics, you definitely have to do it this way for optics as well in this day and age. All right, well, look, interesting. You know, I think about it a little bit. Like, hey, this kind of hanging out, working in your slippers, not too shabby. Like, I like when someone says, "Did you get the whatever?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's in my office." And I just run back upstairs and grab it versus I'll tell someone to bring it from my house. You know, starting to get comfortable here. Yeah. Let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm in my pajama pants and I'm Gina Grad. And that's the news.
Gina. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Simply Safe, last but not least, protect your home. Do it today. Get free shipping at simplysafe.com/Adam. That is simplysafe.com/Adam. All right. I want to thank Jason Van Camp of the book Deliberate Discomfort, everyone. It's available now on Amazon, so you can get it. You can bookmark us and you can go ahead and click through. Oh, Joe Coy is going to be on tomorrow. The great Joe Coy. I look forward to that. You go to AdamCarolla.com and find my book, I'll Be Your Emotional Support Animal. It's available for pre-order as we speak. And also, until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Jason Van Camp, Gina Grad, and Paul O'Brien. Say mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and get everything you need at AdamCarolla.com.